Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the NRL Bulldogs Fans Podcast.
Well, welcome to the NRL Bulldogs Fans Podcast. Scotty and I am back a little over 24 hours after a very, very disappointing result.
That's an understatement, isn't it? It was pretty appalling, especially with just a crowd under 34,000, just a wee bit under 34,000 turning up to the event. The crowd came. The crowd was ready. Didn't look like the
Bulldogs. Fantastic crowd. How good was it?
Absolutely awesome stuff. It was, Fox League was saying, almost sold around the 40,000 mark. Obviously, the memberships you got to take in consideration, especially at bigger stadiums and et cetera, et cetera. I was happy if anything over. I thought, you know, 30,000 would be a good crowd considering where the two teams are sitting. So 34,000, definitely.
So best, as far as King's birthday Eels Bulldogs games go, we can lock that one in for the future years to come. Keep that as a marquee event. Unfortunately,
I was just going to say, you put those two teams just in the eight, even on the bottom of the eight, you start looking at 40, don't you?
What happens if it's King's birthday and Bulldogs Eels and both teams are in the eight? Who knows? It could be 60,000.
Yeah, I reckon 40 in the bottom of the eight, or even a win out of the eight, one of the teams and one team in the eight. And then if you put them both like 6 and 4 for something, 50, 60.
But as you were alluding to, Scotty, the team did not show up. Very disappointing for a number of reasons. One, it's against the Parramatta Eels. To put in a performance like that against the arch rivals, absolutely disgusting. And secondly, it was a must-win game. Season or any chance of making the finals, in my mind, was on the line, especially after the loss the week before against the Roosters. And they came out and delivered a really, really poor performance, especially in defence.
There should be no motivation needed against the Eels, ever. It should just be there for itself. I'm going to agree with you. You put a red line for us now. I was almost going to say last week you could almost do it, but I reckon this week you can. And if they were to lose, to get me some sort of false hope or not, or some sort of hope that they were still going to make finals, it's a, you know, a 24-22 game or something like that where you go, wow, we lost by a goal kick or we can beat those teams on the up. Like, because Eels, they've won a few in a row. They're in some good form.
Both teams heading into that game, you would have put them on, you know, slightly above the Bulldogs, but relatively even seasons. For us to lose that poorly shows where the team is at the moment. I'm not going to talk about stats in this episode, Scotty, because most players were quite disappointing, especially in defence. I couldn't believe it when I got home. Listened to the press conference with Cameron Serrano, and he mentioned that we had 54 missed tackles. That's unbelievable.
You don't win games. And don't worry about the missed tackles. Worry about some of Tevita's plays that don't register as a missed tackle, where it's a misread that goes for a gap. But also, as well, point that Cameron Serrano made as well in that loss is that in that press conference is that good teams have people covering. When someone comes out of the line like that, the inside man comes in and closes that gap. And I looked at him again, some of those tries, and I think Tevita was in the wrong both times. And I don't understand. Oh, sorry. I understand what he's trying to do, trying to make the big play and inspire the team. But I think they're both very low percentage options and poor options. And he picked both of them. But again, no one on the inside tried to jam and close that gap, but was left. They left the side of the Sydney Heads there coming through, giving Parramatta no chance. But again, Tevita, I don't know, it was a bit of the origin in the back of his mind. I think if he could put a good performance in, have a good few hits, some shots, bringing loose ball, might have got himself back in that origin team, or if that's what he thought was the best play, because I'm a bit confused, because I would have just rather him stay in his line and try to put a shot on.
Well, Cam Serrano said in the press conference, he told the boys that they're going to make a mistake in defence, do it at 100%. So perhaps he was just doing that. But yeah, over chasing on both plays there that led to two tries in the first half.
It happens to one, you kind of go, let's not do it again.
Yeah, it happened off the next set, I think it was. It's terrible. Despite all the defensive deficiencies, in the first half, I think we created enough points to be level with Parramatta still, though. But we didn't take our chances, and a lot of that was down to kicking when in open spaces or when opportunities presented themselves. I don't think I've ever seen a team create that many opportunities and put a kick on it. Hayes Perham did it early in the game. Reed Marty did it once. Josh Adakar obviously kicked the ball over the sideline. That was the least disappointing one for me, because if you watch the replay, his body's getting straight at the sideline, so he had to try to do something. I guess he could have dropped to the ground, but he had a half second to make a decision, so he kicked it downfield. But some of the other ones were Hayes Perham felt like he panicked in that situation and resorted to the kick to try to get an opportunity to score points. Was there a second one from Adakar that kicked on the inside to Avarillo? Good on Avarillo for being there, but got a terrible bounce. I think that was on play three. So that's four
examples. Yeah, I still think the pass would have been
Yeah, or just take the tackle and get a quick play of the ball and go for the next tackle and tackle two or three. Well, that's not going off notes. That's just going off the top of my head. So that's four scenarios there where we kicked the ball wire on the attack, which resulted in 0 points. So very, very disappointing.
Yeah, 100% it is, because it's so frustrating. Like, you know, especially when it happened early and they didn't work. It wasn't like one stuck and we're going to try off it early on. And, you know, it kind of plays in the back of your mind. You're thinking, well, it happened earlier. Let's try this again. None of them worked. The closest one to working was a horrible bounce. And even if the bounce was bounced up for Averillo, he would have been absolutely flattened, I think, by Gutho. He wasn't sniffing around that ball there, Gutho. So even then, it would have, he would have the option of the war. So,
well, that was the pretty much the game in a nutshell there. We will get to our 2-1s right now, actually. Let's do that. Let's go into Player of the Year awards. So we'll start off with our two. Scotty, you can mention it, who it is, because we've gone with the same person, so they will get 5 points here with the bonus point.
It's young gun Jacob Preston. Despite the loss, I think, to be honest, I think he'd probably be the only person who could keep his head up high after his performance. He was everywhere. He made a couple of breaks even as well. He was there in an attack. Again, he plays the 80 minutes. Let's not forget this is his first season of top grade. He's just slotted in and looks like a week-in, week-out top grader. 16 runs for 193 metres, 63 post-contact metres, 5 tackle breaks in this performance, two line breaks in those runs, making 32 tackles in this game. So kind of sometimes you kind of forget. I think sometimes when you're watching the game, you kind of forget he's a young gun. He just looks like a top grader.
He's a superstar already, isn't he? Absolute superstar already. And that's not going too far, and that's not using, you know, blue and white eyes or biased or whatever. He is a young superstar of the game in that position. He's doing incredibly Origin. Well in the team. That's third last. Yep, but it keeps on the trajectory. Won't be too far away, will it? Okay. Cool. Now, Scotty, I'll go for my 1 point, then we'll throw to you for your 1 point. I'm glad you went with the person who you did, because I thought he was unlucky to miss my points. And I will just add, I think anyone that watched that game can't argue with Jacob Preston for the Bulldogs, clearly the best player. Yeah. You don't even need to read stats out, just watch the game. He's causing all sorts of troubles on his edge, defensively gets involved as well. Okay, Scotty, 1 point, I've gone Carl Olaapu. He had his best game in top grade. I'm not going to read out any stats, but he had his best game in top grade. It's good to see him starting to show some promise. And I was leaning towards somebody else that you might mention, or you will mention in a minute, but that try that he set up for Matty Burden, how did he do that? He beat 5 players before giving a lovely little short ball onto a rampaging Matty Burden running into a gap. But his strength in that play alone He's got my 1 point. That one play is good enough for 1 point from me. Shows his promise. I've always said that I wanted to see him play a whole year in reserve grade, but that shows what he can do. And at one point, he was almost on his hands and knees in a tackle. He was that low to the ground, and he just stood up out of it. It was an incredible play. And I think it's the first real moment of Carlisle Opu's career where we see a potential superstar. That play, only a fair few players can do that, and that's a superstar play, isn't it? If you can get that consistently, we could be very happy.
No right to score that.
No, absolutely.
They're no right to score that. He ran past Andrew Davey, and in a tackle, no slouch in defence. Went past Clint Gutherson, some say the better all-rounded fullbacks in the game. And not just ran past him, he put him on his backside. He said, take that. And then off to Matt Burton. I think, you know, he put so much energy putting him down, they had to pass the ball to Matty Burton. He couldn't finish off what he started because he was putting players, making players look silly. He made some regular top graders and people have been there at the end of the season look silly.
But it was the whole play though, wasn't it? It was only like, I don't know, 10 meters run or something like that. But it's probably 15 now thinking about it. But it was the strength. It was the short ball. But it was even the sidestep. After pulling out of two tackles, he puts this dirty sidestep on a defender as well before he puts Gutherson on his ass. To be able to come straight out of contact and straight into a sidestep like that, that's a very special play. So he did a couple other good things throughout the night, but that one play, Scotty, was good enough in this performance for 1 point from me. And the player, unluckily, to miss out on my 1 point, but got your 1 point, is
the Lebanese international, Caleb Rojak, on the interchange bench.
Yeah, he definitely had an impact when he came on the field, didn't he? He had a really strong second half.
Yeah, he did. He was just running direct energy. Like, I'm just looking at his stats for the first time right now, by the way. 63 metres in that game, 11 post-contact metres, two tackle breaks. Pretty impressive in such limited time. Had a line break. He played a bit of fullback as well after Averillo failed to finish the game.
Yep.
And whopped up with, three tackles. Just to look at his stats, but it wasn't his stats. It was his involvement, his energy, was running the ball straight. He looked a bit dangerous. The alarm bells ringing when he touched the ball. I said that the start of the week that I wouldn't have him in the 17 this week, but almost grateful that he was because I said Jacob Preston could hold his head up, but I'm sure all his involvements in the 33 minutes he came on, game was realistically over, especially with the rest of the players' attitude. So he did everything he could to try to inspire some sort of chance or attack, but he was left pretty much with him and Presto trying to do it all.
Yep, so overall points tally, Carl Olapu and Caleb Ramjad joined the list on 1 point. They joined Paul Alamoni at the bottom. But the top five players now look this way. Exactly the same as last week. Max King, 13 points. Josh Adekar, 9. Then Corey Waddell, Jacob Carraz, Jake Averillo, and Matt Burton tied in third spot for 8 points. And Jacob Preston is now on 7, just behind that little group as well. So that will be interesting to keep in time. Can anyone chase down Max King? So it seems like Max King got out to a big lead and everybody else is getting stuck just under 10 points.
Yeah, they're just sharing him around. Josh Adekar doesn't get any help because he's got Origin to play this week. So he doesn't have a game for the Bulldogs, so can't pull for any points.
He has a really good game for the Blues, and we have a shocker against the Sharks, and I can't make it some points.
Yeah, fair enough. That's a fair call. But I was going to add that just a few, before we go into those reserve grade games that I know nothing but positives, that's going to come up very soon, so stay tuned for the positive talk, is that Maxi King played 30 minutes on the weekend. There's surely an injury still cloud going over his head.
Yeah.
And tell me if you're at the game, Jacob Kiraz, he's not running right. He's still not running right. He's running off kickoffs. He looks so bad when he's running. He just doesn't look natural, doesn't look like he's flowing through things. So, like, that knee must be still causing him trouble, or there must be something else causing him some sort of trouble because he's running funny. And he's not been known for a funny runner, I guess, like a unique running style. But even his sideways movement led into a try again. His lateral movement's pretty poor, and then off the kickoff, so I was just noticing he was sticking out on the Bulldogs thing until Jack Overload did his knee so they could join each other, looking funny next to each other. So,
yeah, I think it's no secret that there's quite a few players out there playing and should have realized being injuries into games as well on top of that. So, yeah, I think that's
but you tell me,
no secret.
But Blake Wilson isn't a better option, fully fit, than Jacob Kiraz. Because I'm telling you, what Blake Wilson's done in top grade, he is a better option, fully fit.
We might talk about it a bit later, but Blake Wilson might be in a different position in top grade heading forward. Mm-hmm. We don't know. Okay, before we do get to New South Wales Cup games, Scotty, we've got one more thing to go through here. There was a question on the social media channels this week that I've seen blew up on Twitter and Facebook. So why don't you talk us through that one?
Yeah, okay, so it was actually just more of a comment listening to. So this was me who posted this, and it wasn't, not, I'm giving my opinion a little bit after the question, was just listening to people leaving the stadium at a call. I think you made a mention of it. I don't think I took you too seriously, though.
I was joking, but yeah.
Yeah, no, because I was talking that the game should be at Belmore. I think that was just our theme. As a bit of a giggle and laugh while we're leaving, trying to get some sort of enjoyment out of that last 2 hours of football that we watched. Yeah. But it was going towards the car park and just listening to fans, just talking in general. And it was started off as a joke with you, but then some fans saying that he doesn't have what it takes, and other people are, give him a break. It's only been one season. We've had all these injuries. We've had this. And the whole excuse, our roster's way better. So there's a bit of everything going around in circles. So I thought it made an interesting conversation also there, but also I was stuck in the car for about 50 minutes.
Yeah, the car park is terrible. I don't know why, but Sydney Olympic Park had free boom. Yeah, it's working on the exits for some reason.
Yes, usually six
only
or seven.
Three out of. Yeah, it was ridiculous. Anyway, the question you posted, Scotty, on social media was, does questions need to be asked around Cameron Serrano? Defensive expert, we've scored, but we've equaled second worst defensive. Team selection's questionable, or is it too early? Have your say. Now, I'm just looking at the Twitter one right now, Scotty.
I've got the Facebook one, if you like.
It's had 10,500 impressions. 10,500.
Doesn't negative ones work, eh?
I don't know about things working. Okay. Someone simply says no, so I don't know if they're saying no, it's not too early, or if they're saying no questions need to be asked around Cameron Serrano. Frank on Twitter, insert blue tick here, says no this time next year for sure. Salil Lal says, yes, of course, we've gone backwards in attack since Potter was given the back seat this year. Defence sucks. No signs of maturing players. Ciro will hide behind injuries, and we are rebuilding for as long as he can. Just Lichtings said, absolutely not. Half the issue is inexperience and lack of game management, which will come as the team grows. We're a couple of props and a mature halfback away from being a proper outfit. That must be in English terminology, proper. Paul O'Callaghan said no, he will be a good coach, but he's only a rookie coach learning on a run. But I thought Gus was going to spare us the rookie and get us on the road. Now he's talking about a 10-year plan, FFS, which means for frickin' sake.
The PG
Smoothie Luke 69 said no, players need to tackle and implement what they are taught. We lack forward power with no Thompson, Vaughan, like last year. No front row, no wheel, move the deck chairs, but we would need a forward pack that whacks. like Rajap. Let's see Skelton and Wilson pair him out. Zoe D, I think it's pronounced. How long did it take for Penrith to rebuild? How long did it take them to win a premiership? Just going through them now. Rowdy at rounds 12. Yes, any bloke who keeps picking Perham needs to be asked many questions. Picking Perham is like picking a bulldog in a greyhound race. What a comment that one is.
Is that Tony wrong?
Rowdy, rounds 12 on Twitter. Best roster, this is from Tony Lai. He said, best roster we've had in years. Should be expecting improvement when it's not coming. Where is the rebuild that Gus promised since coming over? The club is heading towards a crisis and should be due for another clean out. Gus and Serrano are out of their depth. And I'll just stand on this one because there's about 40 here. But Shuey said, yes, given the money they have spent recruiting prior to and since he has arrived, they are performing worse than we were last year. Uncle Gus will sort it. Lol. So I don't know if he's joking with that a little bit. So before you go into the Facebook reaction, Scotty, and I will give you time for that, the thing I take away from that, without giving my opinion there, is that it's probably at 60-40, 60% saying no and 40% starting to say yes, it is time to ask questions. But it seems like the people that are saying yes, that needs to be asked questions, are aiming more at Gus than Cam from the comments there on Twitter.
Interesting. Yeah, no, it's interesting. And Gus being a very vocal person the way he is in the media as well, using his media, he definitely puts a target on himself a little bit, if he likes it or he doesn't. But he's also not the coach either. And how much involvement does he have in team selection? We really don't know, but some people reckon he's got heavy involvement in the selection process. So it'd be interesting, I mean, unless if you're at Belmore, when they announce the teams and when Cameron Serrato puts it through or whatever, how does it go through Gus, or does he sit with Gus to put that in? I guess we won't really know for sure.
The Facebook reaction, what's happening?
Yeah, so Joe Kilburn said, when the coach chops and changes the half so often, can they build a good combination? He may be coming to the end of his career now, but the team has played some of its best football in games when Josh Reynolds was given decent game time. He's a leader. We need experience. So adding the good old fan favorite Joshy Reynolds making that 17 somewhere, I think he has a point. We look good against the Dragons. I thought he did well in all but one game, really. But is it eye to the future? I'm not too sure. My Curie Hego, my point of view is to drop some of those players and bring New South Wales and Jersey flag players to the Premier League. They're more defensive and their attacking is awesome. So picking players in form. It's the core, but Frederick Geo goes, give the guy a break. The team is just building up to the right combinations. We'll eventually come out. I know the team will improve in the rounds to come. So there's some hope there. Admin Sharon said, I said it before, say it again. When we need a coach with experience and get rid of Gus. So there's to add to your little Gus taking it. Steve Ally says, our forwards are getting monstered every week. So might need to look at a forward pack. I think that's down to Maxi King playing with some sort of injury because he was monstering at the start of the year. That's why he's leading the Bulldogs Fans Podcast Player of the Year. He might actually win it from the start of the year alone, which could be interesting. Steve Schultz said, New South Wales Cup 64-12. Team talks trust. The next guy knows their job. They all seem more calm under pressure and they don't rush silly plays that the first grade need to learn how to do the same. As for Burton, Greg Baum is more effective with a chase behind it. And I personally believe we need someone to stand up and take ownership of the captain spot. There's too many cooks, make the kitchen way too hot. Someone has to take charge out there and before it's too late. Still time to put some pride in the jersey and play for the club. So fingers crossed we can get away from the bottom and win a few. Till then, I'll be on the sidelines cheering the boys. Always proud Bulldogs fan, win, lose or draw, even if it's an ugly game. So there's some passion there. I'll finish it on Greg here because it's going the same thing. There is a lot of comments and there's comments within comments as well. But no, not at all. Ridiculous question. We have already had too many knee-jerk reactions. Changing coaches. Do we want another reset as well? Actually, no, I'll finish off Robert Ball because it goes the opposite. Sorry, and I'll listen to my last one, Robert. He goes, no, ask questions as a result-driven business. But I'm saying that I think all businesses are result-driven. But like sports management, it's probably more, you know, obviously more public and definitely more.
So probably from those ones that you've wrote out there, Scotty, and the other ones that have engaged as well, the other comments there, probably sticking, we haven't done the math, but it does sound like it's sticking around 40% saying, yes, questions need to start to be asked, and about 60% are saying, no, more time is required. My thoughts, probably overall on the team as a season, I think we've definitely gone backwards in defence. I don't think we've defended this poorly for a number of years, even years where we were right down to the bottom of the, well, we are right down to the bottom of the ladder, but even years where we had less hope, let's say it that way, of getting off the bottom of the ladder, we just wanted to not finish last. We were, our defence seemed a lot better than what we're currently seeing at the moment. Just fell apart on the weekend. It was really sad to see. I think there has been improvement in the attack, to be fair. I think we are scoring a fair few points this year, most games, in comparison to the previous seasons. But yeah, we're not playing full 80 minutes. Our defence has really gone backwards.
I think, of course, I think questions need to be asked. That's going to be my thing. Is that, of course, if you're like the CEO or someone, general manager of football, so there you go, the two big wigs, performance, is, of course, the questions need to be asked. And when you get smashed, what's happened? And a lot of the times the questions should be asked, like, was it the week leading up to it? Did you feel something now looking back on the week? Did something happen in the week where you go, whoa, that wasn't right? Now you look back on it and say the training might not have been up to the standard, or did they change something up during the week that they normally don't do, or something? That's all, of course, it's always going to be asked after a loss like that, especially against Parramatta. But like you said, our defence is woeful, to say the best. And Cameron Serrato was highlighted as the man who made Penrith defensive. He was the man behind the great defence. And then you look, and then Trent Barrett was the man behind the Panthers' great attack. And if you look at Ivan Cleary still at the Panthers, and the attack at the Panthers started a bit slow this year, we could be fair, still a bit slow, but they're the best defending team, and their attack is starting to click now when the season, you know, starts to matter, starts to warm up a bit.
So you're saying maybe the media needs to pay a bit more respect to the skills of Ivan Cleary, not his second in charges.
100%, but 100%, Ivan is outstanding as a coach. Like, love him or hate him, whatever he's done at the Tigers. You might hate him for what he's done at the Tigers, and that's fair. If you want
to, he actually looked like he was turning the Tigers around, to be fair. He looked like he had the most success as a Tigers coach.
No, until I think he would have
jumped off the bus. But
yeah, you can hate him for that. If that's fair, the Tigers fans would hate him, and any other fan wants to hate Ivan, which they're more entitled for what he did to the Tigers and had that stance. You can, as a person, but you can't take away his coaching ability. And you know what? We had a chance to nab him when we were going for some coaching issues with Desi at the time, and we kept Desi for another year. We could have had a chance to grab him, but that means we could have had a chance with Nathan as well. It'd been interesting to see if that would have happened, or would have had the Tigers thing happen to us. But what he's done at the Panthers, and like looking at Jack Cogger, by the way, former Bulldog player, who, you know, I love Jack, he's played two great games of football, not overplaying his role, but, you know, coming in for the New South Wales premiership winning halfback, Kangaroo. That's pretty scary, intimidating stuff. Cogger does his job. Cogger looks good. Cogger looks smooth. It's a
funny one. It's a funny one because a lot of players that come back from the Super League have done really, really well. So were we throwing him into that mix as well? He played two great seasons at Huntsville. I know that he did really well over there. He's come back and doing quite well here for the Panthers at the moment. Well,
I was going to say, Ivan's a great coach, so maybe he should be under the target. When does he come off contract?
I think in 2052. Okay, I'd rather talk about the New South Wales Cup, to be honest. We've just done half an hour on Depression City, let's say. But it was the flip of the first grade game. We were clearly the better side on the scoreboard, obviously, with a 64-12 win over Parramatta. It's probably the closest we've gone all year to playing a full 80 minutes. We did have 40 points on the board at halftime, but we still won the second half 24-6. You could say there's probably small lapses, but in comparison to other games where we've played really well for periods and then just disappeared in other periods, it's definitely the closest we've been to playing a full 80. And I tell you, it was really enjoyable to watch a game where the team wearing the Bulldogs jerseys were clearly dominant, not just on the scoreboard, but the pace that they were playing at compared to the Eels, especially in that first half, was incredible, the difference in pace.
Well, let me tell you, it was so good to watch. I want to say the Eels are no slouches. They've got some top graders, or some players who played some top grade experience, as well as players have been for a while. And they knocked off the Bears a few weeks ago.
Yeah, we're talking them up as the dark horses of the New South Wales Cup. And they've been demolished.
And they've got players, when you have, Jordan Rankin, who's been around for years and years and years, he's been a good serviceman for the Eels in the New South Wales Cup. Isaac Lumilu, played some good finals for Melbourne, and, if you got to the games early, you knew he was wearing blue and white last year in the New South Wales Cup. Hayes Dunster, he's a class player. Zach Sini's played top grade at the West Tigers. Jack Murchie. Players are there, and I thought, we've got to make sure we take this game and we've got to, put our foot down, because if we have some lapses in concentration, the Eels can run away winners in this, and thankfully it didn't happen. But players who impressed me, and I would see if I'm missing one, it's very hard not to be, when you win 64-12, most had to do their jobs. I thought Blake Wilson at the number one jersey played outstanding. He was a threat. He looked like a pain in the Eels. Even he did get tackled out once. Joel Skelton, I thought he played well. You'd have thought he would have scored more tries at the 64-12, the way the try scoring form he was in. Brayden Burns could not do no wrong in this game. Got a hat trick. His flick passing, his first try, unreal. Got a lucky bounce, putting himself in position. He went to tap the ball back, missed it. It bounced back up for him and he scored. It just felt like the ball was on the platter. But he also looked like a man against boys out there on the edges. I felt like he was it was unfair. It was almost, you had to take him off the field to make it easier for the Eels. Yeah. Sorry, I almost lost the team. Bailey Haywood.
Yeah. I don't know how he hasn't been given a chance. He's clearly the most well-rounded halfback in the Bulldogs. If you're talking about purely halfback play and what a halfback traditionally does, Bailey Haywood's your man. I'm going to throw Joseph O'Neill out there, Scotty. In only his second game in New South Wales Cup, he debuted the week before against the Roosters. He is a firecracker. He's coming. He has not missed a beat. He got his first try in grade in New South Wales Cup yesterday. And he enjoyed it too, didn't he? So he celebrated like an NRL try, that one.
He looks like a bulldog, doesn't he?
He definitely does. Still, obviously still eligible for flag.
What about this man? Can I bring up the Mr. Four Tries? Mr. Kyle Flanagan?
Yeah, I was just going to say the one that the media's made the most about, Kyle Flanagan, four tries.
The four tries. You know what the most impressive about the four tries? The first one shouldn't have happened. But, sniffing around, catching some eels, but the support play in every single one. I think Blake Wilson goes, "Excuse me, mate, get out of the way," because I could have scored a couple of those tries.
The Larks free, to be fair, were set up by other players.
But the support play being always been there.
support play. He scored his last three tries by just being a support player, anticipating the gap and being there to support his teammates, which is fantastic. The first one was a show and go out at dummy half. And
that should have happened. That should have happened, but he made some...
Parramatta were clearly not on. That was two tries and 4 minutes to kick off the match, so they weren't ready to start that game. But he had a really good game out of dummy half. I think the media is probably overplaying it, to be fair, but his support play was a real shining light, wasn't it?
Our captain, Jackson Topney, who finished the game early because he was 18th man duties for the NRL side, always involved. This man is knocking the door down, smashing the door down, struggling on that top grade side where I think he should be. I think Farmu Brown looked dangerous, looked dynamic. I think it was, you've got to also remember he's coming back from that very poor dislocated elbow. I thought, he looked really good in New South Wales Cup. He was making breaks. He was... A lot of the times in the passing, setting a few things up in the infield, and then he was making his tackles really well as well. So, put a real saying, come on, Cameron Serrano, maybe I could get a bench spot instead as well. But I think the old boy, Joshy Reynolds, was involved in everything. Like, he just added to it. Like, he definitely did not let the energy go down, did he? The energy stayed up. And the number 15... Is it Katoni Kartoga? Say that quickly. I don't think I did.
Well, let me read it. It's the only way I'm going to get it there. The 15 on the bench. You've got to try, of course. That's why you want Kiritoli Kartoga.
Kartoga, yeah. Well, wasn't too far. He signed from the Tigers earlier this year to come across?
Yeah.
Yeah, and his stats have been, most weeks have been not the expectation set, but he was dangerous. He was causing alarm bells on that right edge.
What a double. He looked big too, didn't he? Sometimes it was his size definitely had an impact on the game as well. I'll tell you what, though. Us fans are never happy, are we? The amount of will from supporters in the stadium at the time to get the team to 70 points was as awesome as it was funny in some respects. We were all on that final 2 minutes cheering the boys on, trying to get them across the line. And we did make a line break. And I think if he looks left, away from Josh Reynolds, looks left, we had a player under the sticks, would have scored untouched, would have got to the 70. But the amount of disappointment in the stadium when the 70 wasn't scored, like I said, was quite funny.
And some of these players, I don't know, some of these players are really knocking the door down, especially when you've got an underperforming NRL side and a performing New South Wales Cup side. They can't be doing much better. They can't be sitting first on the ladder.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, there was a game against South in the New South Wales Cup, and there was this massive cheer when Declan Casey scored right on the siren.
Yes, that's true.
That's the biggest... One of the biggest cheers we've heard for a long time in the Swords Cup game. Well, I'll let you know, guys, if you weren't at the ground or you weren't watching on Fox League, the Swords Cup team were actually given half a standing ovation and clapped off the field at halftime by the fans. They were so, the people that were there were so appreciative of the performance.
That's 100%. You're 100% correct. It was a nice feeling. The members were in early on that side. It was a big chunk of the fans were. And there were some Eels fans near us who weren't happy with the first game. They were getting a bit embarrassed, by it. Yeah. Which is, it was good to see that the fans caring about their New South Wales Cup sides, their veggies.
I guess they got their own back.
The last laugh.
Yeah, they did. Last week, Scotty, the jersey flag, we also played on against Parramatta Eels on Friday night. That was a 22-6 win as well. So the flag doing well too. You're just going to pull the ladder up in a minute. And as you do that, the next game in the New South Wales Cup and jersey flag this weekend is on Saturday. It's against the Panthers at Belmore. Should be two really good games. You got the ladders there, but top four clash in both grades, I believe.
100%. All right, so we'll just start the jersey flag first, the under-21s. Bulldogs are sitting in third. They knocked off Eels, who are now in eighth. However, the Bulldogs versus Panthers this week is second, which is the Penrith Panthers, who are on 23 points, versus the third-place Bulldogs on 22. So a win, fighting for second place, while the Panthers are trying to potentially fight for first at the same time. So it should be a cracker of a game. The boys should be up for it, and they should look forward to the test. Yep. It should be, which is exciting. New South Wales Cup, we're sitting on top. We're on 22 points with our 9 wins and 2 draws and 3 losses. We've got the Penrith Panthers this week, who are sitting in third. So the Panthers are on 20 points. A win by the Panthers will more than likely not see them jump us because of the for and against difference. But so it's an almighty win by the Panthers.
They'll equal us, though, if they win. So.
They win, yeah. They'll equal us with points. But also, we've got Newtown on our tails, 1 point below us, sniffing. Yeah. So we need a win because...
This might be a bit of a controversial thing to say. It might be a little bit over the top, but it's not completely over the top. If you don't watch New South Wales Cup and you get a chance to watch this game, go to it. Because if both these teams play as good as they can, in any team in the top 4 or 5 in New South Wales Cup, they play each other and both play to their abilities on the day. That game is as good as quite a lot of the NRL games, to be honest. The standard of quality is really up there. Especially amongst those top 5. So I'd say if you got in your head, you're ranking NRL games 1 to 10 or something, 10 being the highest, a New South Wales Cup game of the top 4, if both teams played to their ability, could be a 5 or a 6.
Yeah,
could be higher than quite a lot of the NRL games. I'm not shitting on the NRL, obviously an NRL fan, a rugby league fan, but just giving some credit to the New South Wales Cup and the amount of talent that not only in our team, but Panthers have, the Jets have, Warriors, Bears. And Bears in particular. It's really good. Even like the Roosters knocked off. I think the Roosters knocked the Jets off a couple of weeks ago in New South Wales Cup. So Roosters players are spread across Roosters and Bears. Like the quality is pretty good, despite Parramatta's efforts on the weekend. And jumping over to the Queensland Cup, we won't spend too much time on this because we've had some negative talk this episode. But the two of McLeansdales, they travelled to Papua New Guinea, and Papua New Guinea won that game 40-4. Next week, Toowoomba are back home against the Willem Manly Seagulls. So hopefully, being back at home, we can get a couple of points on the board. It's got in with the ladder update.
Yeah, the Clydesdales are sitting in 13th on the ladder, which is a 15-team comp. So they're on 6 points. They're a bit safe from the bottom two teams in the Cutters and the Jets. They're only got the 2 points. However, the Seagulls, they're sitting pretty nice on the up. They're coming fifth, so... what a way. We're going to upset them, throw the spanner in the works because...
Have you got the right Seagulls? Just making sure there's 2 Seagulls in the competition. With a Manly, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I got them. Sorry, is there 2? Yes, there is.
I'm joking around with you. But yes, the Cutters are from Mackay and the Jets are from Ipswich, of course. So, yep, if we can take the scalp and win a Manly, that would be a good win for the Toowoomba boys. Hopefully they're not trying to emulate the NRL too much, if you get what I mean, Bulldogs fans. Speaking about the NRL, this weekend, we're playing against the Sharks at 4 p.m. at Construction Site Stadium. Cameron Serrano has come out and said that there will be a lot of changes. Came out all but promised some changes after the poor performance against the Parramatta Eels. And then he's landed the same 17, except for the one origin omission. Josh Onakar obviously out of the team. And he's been replaced by Braden Burns, of course. So I'm not surprised because when he was saying that at the press conference, I was just thinking, yeah, but who are you going to put in? Like, we've definitely got players that deserve an opportunity, but you've really lacked the will or the ability to give a lot of these players opportunities outside of a couple of forwards. So I'm not too surprised. But the lineup does look like this. Hayes Perham is the fullback. Jacob Perez and Braden Burns on the wings, Averillo and Paul Alamoni in the centres. Halves are again Carl Olaapu and Matt Burton. Forwards Chris Patolo, Tamina Pengai Jr., Reed Marty as the hooker. Second row of Jaden Ockenball, Jacob Preston and Harry Edwards. The bench is Caelan Rajab, Curtis Morin, Max King and Corey Waddell. The reserves do look a little bit different this week. Jarrell Skelton is the 18th player, so perhaps we could see him come in, especially if Averillo doesn't get fit for the game. Kyle Flanagan, Faumu Brown, Jackson Torpeny, and Franklin Pele. So those players, all those players had a really good game last week in the New South Wales Cup. So again, it looks like Serraldo is rewarding players who have a good game in the New South Wales Cup in the reserve section of the NRL. And I suppose there is still time for him to make mass changes, or at least five changes, to the starting 17 24 hours before kickoff. But to be honest, Scotty, I don't really see it happening. Maybe Skelton in for Averillo if Averillo's not 100% fit.
Burns just shifts to the centre.
Yep, or give Skelton a crack at centre. I think he'd do well at centre as well.
Just bang with him in the cup, so I thought.
I'd love to. I think he played centre to begin with last year, though. I'd love to see a second hooker be put onto the bench, give Reed a 15-minute break. You could do that over half-time as well, either side of half-time, and get him back out there. But I don't see how you could do that if you're also having Rajab on the bench. Whether that's Brown or Flanagan, I'd like to see that happen. And Jackson Torpeny, well, you know me, Scotty, if I had the choice, he'd be given a lot more opportunities than he currently is. And then that just leaves Trickle and Pele.
Well, I'll tell you right now, I'm a big fan of Farmer Brown. I like him, a fan. However, I'll probably let him sit another week in cup because he played a really dominant game. I want him to go, do that again for me. Do it again. And that's the Farmer Brown that we know. He's always dominated that level of cup. And, you know, coming back from the elbow injury, putting some trust back into it. But Jackson Topeny, I'll just pick him up and chuck him right where Jaden Ockenball is. As much as Ockenball has improved in the forward pack, some of his missed tackles. And I knew it was going to be a problem because the way he tackles is very weird. And it's something he's going to get used to. But my thing that I was thinking last night after the game is we're developing this new player, Jaden Ockenball, into a second rower. He played cup there a few years ago. And then he got moved to the wing after an injury happened, which developed him, made him the player he is, got him to the top grade spot. If we're developing a player into second row, shouldn't we be doing that in cup? Wouldn't that make more sense? We've got him turn him into a forward again, that we do that in a reserve grade, where the thing is, Jackson Topeny destroys cup almost feels like on a weekly basis. You always hear, like, he did this run, he did this. He made this many tackles. He did this many meters. And we always hear it. Now, I think he does a good job, so I would just back the straight swap there. Franklin Pele, I can definitely understand if they want him another week or two in cup. So he's, you know, been in and out, suspension, injuries this year. It looks like they're making him a specialised spot in this year's cup. They're putting him on the interchange bench. I think they're trying to mimic more. How they're going to use him in a top grade match off the bench, which I think that's one thing I must give to Cameron Serrato. I really feel like the New South Wales Cup has he's really trying to. I think he's got a heavy say on the team where players are playing because you could easily put Farmy Brown at 5'8". That would have made a lot of problems solved, eh? No, we're going to have him at lock because that's probably the position he's going to play in top grade. That ball playing lock if he's going to come back in top grade. Josh Reynolds on the bench. If he's going to play top grade, he's probably going to be in the change bench. Franklin Pele, interchange bench, impact player. Like, he wants to see it. Like, a lot of other teams would have had players being moved around. So I think he's trying to do the greater good for top grade.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Now, I'm just going through the list here, Scotty. I'm looking at players who are on the reserve list in the NRL this week who aren't named in the New South Wales Cup. So Jarrell Skelton, not named in the New South Wales Cup at all.
So I would say he's at least an 18th man.
He's chair to play, definitely. Kyle Flanagan is not named in the Swans Cup squad at all.
Isn't he?
No, he's not. Okay. So the hooker, after you talking up how good Farnby Brown is at lock, he's been named at hooker in the Swans Cup.
Has he?
Topoli has been named to start in the second round. Franklin Pele has been named to start on the bench in the Swans Cup. So that leaves the two previously mentioned, Skelton and Flanagan. So
one of them
don't know who's at risk, or one of them could be. Yeah, one of, they can always drop back. Of course, it is the New South Wales Cup, so maybe we're reading too far into it. However,
I think they won't, because they're very big, the Bulldogs, and they have been for ages for whatever reason. Since 18th man's been in, it's rare that a player plays 18th man and plays cup like yesterday. Yes, Jackson Topney did it, but there's been times where a lot of players. I know it's happened right yesterday, but how many times have we seen a player miss cup?
Well.
And play 18th.
I suppose the other thing to go to your point there, Scott, is that the New South Wales Cup game's on before the day before the NRL game this week, and it is an away game. So there are a few different things to consider there. So I don't know if Kyle Flanagan was to play, though. I don't know who he comes in for. Like, my initial reaction would be it'd have to be Rajab. But that would be a harsh call after the game he had.
But that's the thing. Like, but it's not uncommon for Serrato to have. I wouldn't be overly shocked if we had a Rajab and Flanagan on the bench. Or a Rajab and Brown. Not
well,
like for I'm just saying for those like a very small, we've played very weak benches in the past.
We have. Okay. Well, Scotty, I think we will leave it at that.
One more thing.
Oh, yep, sure.
Sorry.
We've just got it to go on a point, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. No, because sorry, this was not spoken about before. This is just a random rugby league topic, by the way, or poor topic.
I was bringing back one of the old segments.
Grind my gears or something.
Long time listeners would know that we had a segment at the end of episodes that would just be a random game topic of the NRL. Yeah,
but this one's actually not a game topic. This one's more of a coverage topic. Of the game. Fox League was covering the game, right, yesterday. And I was watching some of the highlights and some of the moments in the game, you know, like the knock-on that the Eels did and the double movement and stuff like that. Anyway, was the point what really annoyed me was the Mitchell Moses. I think if people remember, Matt Burton tries to launch a kick and Mitchell Moses charges it down. He was offside by a country mile. Liam Kennedy was on the spot, blows the whistle. And it was called by the touchies. The touchies had Moses. I could see it from a mile. I knew if you got anywhere near it. I'm pretty sure the whistle was blown before the actual charge down was even hit.
Oh, I think it was just after, but that's definitely why he doesn't put the ball down, Moses. He actually hit
the whistle. Yeah. And this is not an attack at Moses or anything. The coverage. You might be right. The whistle might have happened as he was doing the charge down or just after, but the touchy. Ziggy was screaming. I could see him screaming that he's offside. He's making his presence heard. I knew straight away from the moment if he was to get that ball, I wasn't even worried about watching what happened after it because I knew it was a penalty. I could see the referee pick up the whistle to his mouth and blow the call. Now, I know you didn't watch the game. I don't know if you've watched highlights of the game. I don't know if that picked up. I don't know if that was on the mini.
It was. I've seen the mini. Yep.
Now, I think you know what I'm going to do with this. Warren Smith commentating. Have you seen a more disgraceful commentary? Because he was abusing almost Mitchell Moses. Couldn't believe he didn't put the ball down for a whistle that was blown. And if that's the case, why wasn't he more disgraced at the Bulldogs players for only one chasing through? Because I'll tell you why. Because everyone heard the whistle.
Yeah. I did pick that up. But, yeah, it was clear. Warren, that if you just maybe listen and don't be so happy to launch into a tirade, you might have actually heard the whistle as well.
Yeah, and it brought up some points of, you know, sometimes of them not being there. Lara Pitt confirmed yesterday they were at the stadium because the only defence from the people who were watching at home said, settle down, Warren, settle down. And some people said, well, to be fair, he wasn't at the game. He was forced to commentate it from. If he was at the game, that's an excusable miss because it was obvious at the game. that the penalty was blown.
Yeah.
And I think so much so the Eels fans kind of got up and went, like the Eels, the way bait was like up and then down straight away before anything was to happen. It was that obvious that the penalty was blown. Warren's, but the whole point was if he was there, it's even worse. But even there's coverage, like you've said, moving forward, we've seen particularly out of state games, commentators not being at the stadium, calling the games off a monitor and the whole coverage thing, but also the dramatization of it. Jesus, like talk about even the knock on from the Dragons last week, and guess who was the commentator? Mr. Warren Smith. Blowing up Deluxe. I recall that, yes, it was probably they got it wrong, but describing it as one of the worst calls he's ever seen. Settle down. Like, you know what I'm...
Well, if you're going to talk about commentary, so am I. And it's the same moment, but it's the other commentator I'm going to have a go at. Steve Roach actually says on the commentary, look at the replay. He wasn't offside.
Oh, he left. He left.
Oh, what a joke. And it just so happens to be Mitchell Moses, the nephew of Billy Elias, the best mate of Steve Roach.
Yeah, okay?
Well, one of the best mates of Steve Roach. Obviously, there's that other guy as well. What's his name? Ciro. Ciro.
Yeah. Yep, there you go. It's also the other guy. Legendary. Roman legend.
It just to see him go off about that as well. I'm not the biggest Steve Roach commentator fan, but that was terrible.
But that's the thing, though, is that just to finish, I wouldn't mind opening it to people who are watching at home, because I feel sorry for the people watching at home who might have been confused because the commentator had no idea what was going on and was ready to make a drama situation. Because he naturally believed, he was dumb enough to believe that Mitchell Moses wouldn't put the ball down. And was happy to be bumped by Matt Burton to the ground, which wouldn't have happened if Mitchell Moses, that whistle didn't go off, that whistle went a little bit later.
Yeah.
And the referee was waiting for more of a touch touch or couldn't hear the touchy. Moses grounds the ball. There's no doubt in the world he grounds it, but the whistle was blown, everyone heard it. But the thing is, Fox League's commentary or Fox League's coverage of the game is 100 times better than Channel 9. And they're rubbish.
Yeah.
They've become worse each year. The commentators are like trying to dramatize things when it doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
Well, trying to create headlines almost while they're commentating.
All right. Also, something that happened today, Scotty, Shane Flanagan got named as coach of St. George Illawarra Dragons, so just put it out there now how quickly until the car flooding into Dragons stories come out.
I think it will happen, but the Dragons will have to make the official announcement, a little press conference, I'd imagine.
It's never stopped media before. All right, let's leave it at that. Hopefully we have a better showing against the Cronulla Sharks in Cronulla on Sunday before we head into the bye, but I'm not very hopeful.
No, I think it might be the same scoreline.